Merci, monsieur le modérateur. Merci, Père Jean Collomb. C'est pour moi un très grand plaisir d'être au retour ici à Sorrento pour la deuxième fois. Et il faut dire que l'invocation passionnée qu'a fait Antonio Corvino tout à l'heure sur cette mer, la Méditerranée, son avenir et son passé, m'a fait rappeler quelques vers que j'ai appris en France il y a presque 50 ans. Heureux qui, comme Ulysse, a fait un beau voyage et puis s'est retourné chez soi pour le reste de son âge. Institutional economics teaches that good policy is not a matter of universal formulas, but a question of context. In the case of small countries, like small species, of finding a niche. In the case of larger regions, a question of matching conditions to opportunities and realizing opportunities in relation to potentials. Effective development will therefore not follow some single best model, but many different models, each with its own virtues and limitations. That is, I believe, to be a fundamental underlying theme of all of these meetings in Sorrento for the last 5 or 6 years. The famous characteristic of the Mediterranean region is that it is neither north nor south. It lies culturally and economically well north of the global south, yet it is south of the north. On its south side, there is North Africa. On its north side, what is now called the periphery of the Eurozone. It's a peculiar condition, but it's not unlike that of the American South, sandwiched between New York and the Big West on the one side, Mexico on the other. It's not unlike that of Mexico, sandwiched between, in economic terms, the United States and, say, China. It's even not unlike the region where my father was born, which was southern Ontario, in a small town that my grandfather described as the great center of rail-borne commerce in North America. A link between New York, Chicago, and San Francisco, the land bridge between Europe and the Orient. The trains passed through all the time, and the only difficulty was that the trains did not stop. The crucial fact about large integrated continental economies, which I learned, by the way, or at least heard expressed most eloquently, by our friend Bruno Amoroso many years ago, and was also, I think, nicely illustrated just now by the charts and slides shown by Antonio Corvino, is that advanced technological, industrial, service, and even agricultural activities tend to concentrate over time, if you leave them alone, in a single integrated region. They do not naturally diffuse over space. Thus, we have banking in Manhattan, not even in the Bronx. We have Manhattan and London, let's say. We have information in Silicon Valley. We have software in Seattle, and we have automobiles and much else beside in Germany, with the added drama in Europe that this concentration favors some nations, some particular geographic regions that are in fact separate countries over others, and that national boundaries define the limits of social insurance, military spending, and a large share of public investment. This doesn't mean that other regions have no industry. Italy is a vast industrial power. It is a question of the balance of advantages and of trade. So concentration under these circumstances produces divergence. In the American South, American South endured 7 decades of crushing poverty following the end of the American Civil War. That poverty was only broken, that poverty, that underdevelopment was only broken by the New Deal, which created social insurance on the national, which in our case is the continental scale, a minimum wage, price supports, and other programs for agriculture, vast public investments in infrastructure and logistics, such as the Tennessee Valley Authority, the electrification of the entire region, and then by military mobilization, which took advantage of the climate to locate airfields and also ammunition factories in the region, continuing from World War II all the way through the war in Vietnam. This was not Keynesianism. This was not simple pumping up of purchasing power and demand. It was a program of continental development. And that is what it took to raise the American South. Of course, this is not what we can expect to happen in Europe today. Europe today is richer than we in North America were in 1933. It can afford more than we could at that time. But the situation is complicated by institutional limitations, political limitations, ideological limitations, and by the fact that the world is different from what it was in those days. The rest of the world is also far richer and more developed than it was. And the Mediterranean, the south of Europe, is not the industrial periphery of the world in the way that the south of the United States was 70 years ago. It is a middle region with top-of-the-line advanced industry to the north and vast modern low-wage consumer goods manufacturing to the east. So what to do? A first key, clearly, and again I come back to this theme, that I think has underlain the construction of these meetings, of meetings that are focused on the economic potentials and particularities of a particular region. The first theme, the first key, is clearly to break with the one formula model, the model framed by neoclassical economics and neoliberal politics, the Washington Consensus, or the program, the diktat of the Troika, which consists in practice rather than in theory, of a phase of debt-fueled speculation, which is visible everywhere, from Greece to Spain, to Portugal, to Ireland, here in Italy, followed inevitably by collapse, by debt deflation in the futile pursuit of a restoration of competitiveness through internal devaluation. That's the formula, but it can never succeed. It can never be achieved, and for 2 basic reasons. First of all, industrial location decisions do not depend very much on wages. If they did, the advanced industries wouldn't be in the high-wage regions where they plainly are, everywhere in the world. It's a little bit of wage competitiveness, but it's very much on the margins compared to the advantages of being close to other advanced technology, to having the access to high-level university talent, to having the being on top of the most efficient and convenient infrastructure and in the flow of the great circuits of world trade. And second, the austerity that produces debt deflation actually ruins the social and the physical infrastructure which is required for a successful climate of economic investment. It's important, therefore, to recognize what the American South, and I have lived for 30 years there in the state of Texas, and Latin America for that matter, have learned, which is that debts are not sacrosanct. When they can't be paid, they should not be paid. They should be written down. Progress restarts after the losses have been taken and shared, and the moral responsibility for the problem does not lie with the debtors alone. The creditors have been paid for risk. They are not and cannot be immune from sharing in the revaluation, in taking some of the losses. And further, I would add, since I live in what is possibly, certainly, the largest, well, maybe now tied with the Eurozone for the largest currency union in the world, in economic terms, membership in that currency union should not and cannot be put at risk simply because financial relationships have to be reorganized from time to time. I mention that because I had the privilege for the first 5 months of this year of a close involvement with the government of Greece, which tried to make the point to its European partners that it was necessary to break with a dysfunctional and counterproductive austerity that had failed to produce economic recovery over 5 long and painful years, and that it was necessary to restructure an unpayable debt. Neither point prevailed. And Greece, as you know, is now under a regime of dispossession and liquidation. Basically a colonial fire sale affecting the public sector, the business sector, and the household sector. What will emerge as matters continue along these lines, if they are allowed to continue along these lines, may be modern in some dystopian sense, but it will not be Greek. It will likely resemble to a degree some Caribbean dependency of the United States. Not the Mediterranean model I think that you have in mind, with menial jobs for local citizens and beaches and cultural amenities for wealthy tourists. This is unlikely to be accepted without both passive and active resistance carried out by those who remain after those who have professional talents and other skills have departed. I don't think it would be considered acceptable for this outcome to be visited on Portugal or Spain or Italy. So what is the alternative? The point that I would make, and that is made most eloquently these days by the leading economists of South America, frankly, who have been working in intellectual and policy independence to an astonishing degree for 15 years, from whom we can learn a great deal, is that there are many alternatives. Another world, other worlds are possible. This meeting is primarily about goods and infrastructure and logistics. Yet let me offer a word about another aspect of the development future of the region, which to my mind clearly also lies in part with sectors that are essentially services sectors, but services sectors to which high income and also aging populations are trying to find a satisfactory and happy life of which these populations have an increasing need, and sectors which can help this region make a bridge between peoples to the north and those to the south and the east. You've already heard this morning about the arts and culture in the case of the town of Matera. It's a brilliant example of what I have in mind. There is health care. There are services to the retired. There is higher education and scientific research. There is the restoration and development of the environment, both the resurrection or reconstruction of post-industrial sites, decarbonization, and the pursuit of new energy in this region, which is bathed by sunlight. There is infrastructure not only for trade and commerce, but also to support an abundant and high quality of social life. Forget, it's also people who need to have efficient, shared, underlying physical support for the way they live. And there is support for enterprise. Private enterprise on the small and medium scale, including manufacturing, including design, including innovation, and including especially high-value agriculture, which again becomes increasingly part of the consumption desired by high-income populations. Now, the income levels that these activities support are not necessarily the highest ones compared to finance, compared to advanced technology, heavy machinery. They lack the predatory and perhaps the global element that those sectors have, but they support a better way of life, a more egalitarian and robust society, and that is a compensating differential. So success will be measured here by creativity, by jobs, and by the population balance when the immigration is no longer of your best and brightest and youngest. People are seeking their futures here, and not so much by vast increases of particular and individual wealth. How to get there? Broadly, the following policy steps are part of the mix: to protect, maintain, and fund social insurance, to build on the accomplishments of the 20th century, to raise and maintain wage standards, particularly for low-income workers, to pursue environmental sustainability and decarbonization, to provide decent and productive jobs in socially useful sectors, to restructure debts and break the grip of finance on the state, and to reform the state, of course, battling corruption, tax evasion, clientelism, and inefficiency. And above all, in this region, which is so much a frontier in so many ways, and was so much affected by recent events, to restore the peace and to maintain it. Greece, for all its faults and flaws, and ultimately failures, did try to articulate this path earlier this year. Portugal may soon become the next nation to take this course, to take up with a fallen standard. December, who may know? Who can say what may happen in Spain? But of course, the hinge of history in this matter is here. It's in Italy, a large, powerful country that can, in fact, change the course of history and whose decisions cannot be ignored. If the currents which are coming out now from the Mediterranean region flow strongly also here, then it seems to me that articulating a coherent, better development path, something that can change the course of Europe and strengthen European unity and reverse the current tensions which run the risk of pulling Europe apart, might just come out of here. And let me close. I began with a few lines of poetry. I've got a few more, and these are from an American poet. This is Walt Whitman. And these are lines that I first heard in a very difficult moment, the presidential campaign of 1968, from the lips of Senator Eugene McCarthy. Poets to come, orators, singers, musicians to come. Not today is to justify me to answer what I am for, but you, a new brood, native, athletic, continental, greater than before. Arouse, arouse, for you must justify me. You must answer. I myself, but write one or two indicative words for the future. I but advance a moment, only to wheel and hurry back into the darkness. I am a man who saunters along without fully stopping, turns a casual look upon you, and then averts his face, leaving it to you to prove and define it, expecting the main things from you. And on that note, good luck for the next couple of days. Thank you very much indeed.